Welcome, everyone, to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host, Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 28. In this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program taped on Wednesday, July 21st, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets beginning the weekend of Saturday, July 24th, 1982. If you like this podcast and you want a little bit more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, with most of the focus going to our Twitter and Facebook pages, primarily our Twitter page, but we do have all of it. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us as we review these shows, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network over at WWENetwork.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at the mighty MidAtlanticGateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, don't head over to MidSouthPod.com. The Mid-South Television Wrestling Review Show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who usually cover today in Bill Watts' territory, but for reasons unexplained, the July 24th episode is missing from the WWE Network and is unavailable from any other source as well. This is a fate that we're going to sort of be tackling soon, although we have a little bit of light at the end of our tunnel, but that's in August, and we still need to get through July, and here to help me do that is my co-host, Roman Gomez. Roman, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Mike. Always a pleasure to talk Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling with you.
Yeah, getting back on the horse here, and we are 2 weeks removed from Roddy Piper defeating Jack Briscoe and winning the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. We had a little bit of a come-down week last week. We come down a little bit more this week. No Piper to be found in physical form on the show, although in spiritual form and in taped form, we will get a chance to see him a little bit later on. But this show began with Bob Caudle standing at the desk with a familiar face to the area, Leroy Brown, a guy that a lot of people had seen a couple of years earlier as a good guy. And he still looked like the same good guy. He had on his denim overalls, his work boots, his construction hat. But he had stepped over to the dark side, and you knew that because he was standing there with Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
A great lineup of stars this week. We'll be telling you about the matches a little later right here. Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and I understand a new man in Sir Oliver Humperdinck's stable.
I've got some very good news for everybody out there, but good news for me and good news for Bad Leroy Brown. We've joined forces.
Yeah.
We have signed a new contract for Leroy with the House of Humperdinck in the six-figure range. I'm not going to make any quotations about prices, but he's working for me now. The big man from Chicago, Halstead Street, Daddy, the roughest part of Chicago. This guy can take care of business, and he's working for me now. Can you imagine this body run by this brain? Let me tell you something. This is the last time I want everybody, all the peasants out there, to take a good look at Leroy, because this is the last time you'll ever see him dressed like this. He's rather kind of ragtag-ish, but I promised Leroy one thing when I signed that contract with him. I promised him he'd be wearing silk suits, wearing alligator shoes, wearing diamond rings, smoking big cigars, and dating the most beautiful women in the world. And, brother, I'm going to make it all come true for you.
Hey,
I'm going to make him the first black NWA champion in the history of wrestling. He is going to be the man on the top. He is going to be the man to reckon with. And now he's with the House of Humperdinck. You tell him,
Leroy. The House of Humperdinck! Yeah, now the people out there wondering, say, what happened to Leroy? Well, I'm going to tell you what happened. M-O-N-E-Y, money, baby. That's what runs the world today. And my man Humperdinck done promised me. He said, Leroy, join the House of Humperdinck, and the world is yours. And me and Humperdinck going to take over everything at Empire. I'm going to serve notice to everybody right here and now. Don't get in the bad man way, because from here on in, I'm going to show you and how I used to do it back in Chicago. We throwing away the rule book. We going to the top. Me and Sir Oliver.
That's exactly right. You're going to get a chance to see exactly what we're talking about in just a few seconds here, Bob. We're going to go to the ring right now. Come on.
All right, fans. That's the news from Sir Oliver Humperdinck and Bad Bad Leroy Brown. And we're going to see Bad Bad Leroy in action when we come back.
So there we hear from Sir Oliver Humperdinck and his new charge, Bad Bad Leroy Brown. And Roman, at least to me, it has been a big-time net positive having Sir Oliver Humperdinck in the area. The last time we had a manager of any note, that was Gene Anderson. We have talked at length about the limitations of Gene Anderson, especially when he was trying to get over the Ninja. Instantly, the Ninja became a more fascinating character just by standing next to Sir Oliver Humperdinck. We have seen Ivan Koloff come into the house of Humperdinck. We will see some others do so as well, but Roman, one constant that we're going to see when it comes to Humperdinck is the wonky way at which members are added. We are going to see it this week. We are going to see it next week. How he goes about recruiting. Long story short for everybody, and then I'll shut up here. Leroy then went in to face Keith Larson, and Leroy destroyed Keith Larson. He's obviously under the employ of Sir Oliver Humperdinck. They make sure that you know that Humperdinck has gotten in his head, because after he delivers his big splash, Humperdinck tells him to pull Larson up at the one count, which he does. Then he just shoves him back down, and you get a three count, and that's that. But then he goes after Larson, laying the heavy heel heat on him. And then that's when Ricky Steamboat runs out to make the save, and then we have what looks to be the setup of Ricky Steamboat and Leroy Brown, which is fine, except for it seems like these things probably should have taken place in different chunks, and maybe we should have had, if Leroy Brown was going to debut as a heel, done so in a different way.
Yeah, the introduction of Leroy Brown to the House of Humperdinck, to me, came off very, very flat. I mean, first of all, he's still wearing his old clothes. I thought it would have been effective if he had come out suit and tie, diamond rings, you know, gold watch, looking sharp, and then Cottle could have said something like, what the heck is this? You know, and they could have done something. You know, as the announcer, Cottle is a conduit to what we as fans are listening to. And Cottle didn't even really put it over. Now, granted, Leroy Brown is nowhere near in the same league as Hulk Hogan. I get it. But when Hogan joined the NWO, if you flash back, I still remember Schiavone, and that was 25 years ago, saying, Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. There was emotion. There was passion. You know, Leroy Brown coming out and turning heel, you could hear the crowd, the television audience. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. It just came off very, very flat as the introduction. You know, things picked up a little bit once the match got going, but just him being introduced into the House of Humperdinck, it was nothing.
And we've seen this with Humperdinck, with Greg Valentine coming into the area and just kind of by association being tied up with Humperdinck. Sergeant Slaughter has kind of, you know, they've floated in and out of each other's interviews, and it seems like that they may be angling to put them together, which obviously we know in hindsight doesn't happen. Now, this isn't going to be much of a spoiler, but next week we're going to see the same type of situation take place with Matt Bourne and, believe it or not, with the guy that Humperdinck replaced as the top manager in the area, Gene Anderson, who we see back in the ring teaming with Matt Bourne in a six-man match, and I won't reveal too much there, but it looks as though it's possible, or at least hinted, that they could be members of the House of Humperdinck. And to be honest, we're not even done with that today, with guys looking like, just by being bad guys, that they may become associated with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, but we'll get to that in a moment. One of the interesting parts of today, actually on the show, is Stu Schwartz and Dave Hepner, two referees for the show. And Stu Schwartz had the first match between Leroy Brown and Keith Larson in the red polo referee shirts, black pants, and red shoes. A shout out to Red Shoes Dugan, I would assume. there wasn't much that went on with it. Leroy Brown won with a big splash until Ricky Steamboat came in and they started fighting. Then it took Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel coming in to run Leroy Brown off, including a great spot where Leroy was close up against the ropes. Wahoo and Briscoe had come in, and Leroy had to dump and go, and Jack Briscoe just slaps his hands, and Leroy Brown takes a perfect flat back bump and rolls right out of the ring. Quite amusing. But then we got Sir Oliver Humperdinck back out there talking again, and this is when I mentioned that we weren't done yet with guys being associated with Sir Oliver Humperdinck by default. Sir Oliver Humperdinck played a tape of Roddy Piper and the Magnificent Morocco on Worldwide Wrestling, a tape of them against Abe Jacobs and Mike Davis. And during this time, he explains Leroy Brown's turn, Roman, and I'll get to that in a moment. But now we see Sir Oliver Humperdinck angling for Roddy Piper and the Magnificent Morocco. Obviously, Morocco, not really a heel in the area, but Roddy Piper, the number one heel in the area, and Morocco, who had recently screwed Wahoo McDaniel out of the U.S. heavyweight title and supposedly has a personal services contract with Roddy Piper. So he's in the scene there, and we have Humperdinck kind of aiming at them. What did you think about that?
It was a lot of Humperdinck. And then that interview after the Piper segment, it just seemed to go on and just went nowhere. They're trying to plant seeds with Humperdinck, but I just did not think that interview was real effective, and I thought it was a little lengthy, personally.
And, you know, I'm not going to play any of when he was talking over the tape of Piper and the Morocco match, but I will play a little bit here because at least this will do something to try to explain Leroy's turn and to further try to cement something that essentially was literally, at the beginning of the show, sprung upon the audience, a guy that they had been a relatively beloved character before. Now being one of the main bad guys going out there and now in a feud with one of their top baby faces, Ricky Steamboat.
All right, fans, with us right now at ringside, Sir Oliver Humperdinck still here. And Sir Oliver Humperdinck, let's talk about bad, bad Leroy Brown. And I'm sure the fans would be interested in knowing why. I mean, they've admired this big man now for some time. He's come a tremendous way in professional wrestling. Why? Why would he go over to the House of Humperdinck?
Just because you're admired in any sport or in any business. If you're admired, that's fine. But financially, it doesn't put money in the bank. What puts money in the bank is being a winner. And being a winner, as everybody knows, is being associated with Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Leroy Brown signed a six-figure contract with me. It's good for a long, long time. Leroy Brown was out here a little while ago in a t-shirt and dungarees, but you'll never see that again. He won't be dressing like you peasants dress out there. He's going to be wearing custom-made suits, wearing big gold diamond rings, wearing gold around his neck, having lovely ladies on him all the time, because now he's with a class organization, and that's the House of Humperdinck.
All right, now, let's talk about Sir Oliver Humperdinck just a minute. Are you saying that you and that your mind and your mind about professional wrestling, that you're going to be able to bring about that change in this man?
I know I can. You just saw a small example of it a little earlier in this TV program where I had Leroy go out and destroy this guy. I mean, destroy him, not play with him, not mamby-pamby around like these other guys do, but destroy him. And he did it in short order. He did it in about 2 or 3 minutes. This is the thing that I can inspire in Leroy. I can inspire him to go on to greater heights. I can inspire him to go on and maybe even hurt some people that I want hurt around here, like Jack Briscoe and Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat, I think you started something here today. You should never have jumped in the ring on Leroy Brown. What a stupid, stupid move. But listen, somewhere down the line, we're going to get the books even. We're going to balance out the books. And Ricky Steamboat, when it comes time for us to get ours, brother, you can rest assured we're going to get it, and we're going to get you. Any place, any time, anywhere, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to Leroy. We're going to go everywhere. We'll go all over the world together, but we're going to get you somewhere down the line, Ricky Steamboat, and then we're going to pay some heavy dues. Leroy Brown, he's working for me now. He's working for the man. He's working for the evil genius, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. And Leroy will be around for a long, long time.
And that's it right here, ringside fans.
There we go, Roman. A long promo, yes, but I get the feeling, although it was Sir Oliver Humperdinck that was out there, as opposed to, let's say, David Patterson, who we're going to be hearing from a little bit later on, that this may have been in lieu of localized promos that would have been airing at the time, just from a time-wise point of view of about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, and the fact that it was just basically Bob Cottle out there kind of like plugging Humperdinck to talk about basically Brown and then just himself, that this may have been just a done to fill time.
I wondered that as well, because in that span of time, you could have had, like you said, about three guys probably do 40-second interviews, and it was quite the lengthy interview, so maybe it was just kind of a time filler.
Now, we're going to get a bunch of commentary in our next match as well, too, although it is going to be very, very welcome. We have heard Ivan Koloff comment on Jimmy Valiant and Jimmy Valiant's mental state before, and it seems as though the Boogie Woogie Man and all of these battles that have been taking place throughout the first half of the year with the Russian Bear has started to take their toll on Ivan Koloff, maybe started to drive him nuts a little bit here, and we're going to get a Jimmy Valiant match against Jeff Sword. Looks like he could be Jimmy Valiant's younger brother, but the Boogeyman out there, purple tights, white hearts going up and down the leg. I'm not exactly sure what he had ironed on to his rear end there, but it really doesn't matter. Dave Hempner, the referee for this match, he's in a tan shirt with brown pants and white shoes, just looking extra generic out there as a referee. But not only do we get Valiant inside the ring, what we get is Ivan Koloff on the microphone, because as this Valiant match is going on, we get Ivan coming out, and boy, is he upset. And boy, you can hear that the Boogeyman maybe has gotten to him a little bit.
In the form of handsome Jimmy Valiant, and speaking about a buzzsaw, he just walked into the studio, big chain around his neck. Here's the Russian Bear.
This is right, American. Ivan and you Koloff. American people out there, I've got something to say. I'm proud of my heritage. I'm proud of my country. And I'm also proud of my TV belt. Whether these people out here like it or not, I'm the TV champion. But I resent very much receiving all these letters, thousands of letters from the American people criticizing Koloff, calling Koloff a coward, afraid to wrestle people like Ricky Steamboat, people like this man here.
Jimmy
Valiant,
yeah.
Right. I'm afraid of this man here with the blonde hair, yellow hair, I should say, jump around the ring using nothing but punches and kicks. I should be afraid of him. He doesn't show me nothing. I don't think he's worthy of a title shot. That's why I'm not giving him a title shot.
All right.
I think there's something has happened to this mind, the mind of this man, to his brain. I think from eating all this American food or possibly taking something has destroyed his brain. And he can't think anymore about wrestling, counters and such. And look, all he can do is kick and punch out there. And I hear the American people go crazy for him. And I hear he's bad-mouthing Koloff, saying things about Koloff that are not true.
Oh, and I don't know if he's saying anything untrue about you, Ivan.
Well, I know that he is, because he is using his big mouth. And if he was ever to give a match against Koloff, if I ever decide to give him a match, I would show that not only his hair is yellow, but he's got a yellow streak down his back.
And you were just listening, of course, to the NWA TV champion, the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff. And believe it or not, I got to tell you, right into the studio, all decked out.
So there we hear from the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, some theories as to what is wrong with the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, making excuses as to why he will not put his Mid-Atlantic Television Championship up on the line. Jimmy Valiant must be eating all that American food, or maybe he's taking something that is causing all of his mental faculties to take a ride somewhere. Roman, could it be both? Could it be both of those things when it comes to the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, who took about 2.5
yeah,
minutes there before he disposed of Jeff Sword?
Yeah, I don't think Ivan Koloff was referring to Flintstone vitamins either that Valiant was taking. But, Valiant made pretty short work of Jeff Sword. And I don't know how it was on the version you saw, Mike, but on the version I saw, besides the overdub on Valiant's music, it sounded like they piped in some crowd noise when he came out. It seemed extra loud. And when I was watching the crowd, you know, there were people clapping, but I don't know, just it didn't match up. And I was like, wow, it's awfully loud considering there's only a few people clapping.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the overdub that they decided to use for the music. And then sometimes they actually add in the crowd because you have the overdub going over, but for whatever reason, that's not working. So they will sweeten the crowd or they will add crowd noise. It's just one of those really, really frustrating things that you got to deal with on the network that you completely understand. I mean, nobody's paying Manhattan Transfer a bunch of money every time Boy from New York City is played. I'm sure probably at this point, they would appreciate the royalties, and their offspring would probably as well, but WWE is just never going to do that, and their offspring are probably never going to do it as well. So that's just the way it's going to be, and unfortunately, that took some of the fun and excitement out of what ended up becoming next, because what we got was a pre-recorded promo with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and this was recorded in front of the worldwide set, but it does have Humperdinck commenting on the match that just took place with Jeff Swarte. He definitely references that match before he explains what is going on with Ivan Koloff and Jimmy Valiant. And he explains it away by saying he had to buy the time. They would not give him any extra interview time on TV, which, as Roman has pointed out earlier on, this is a lot of damn Sir Oliver Humperdinck, so it's a damn shoot, because, you know, I probably wouldn't give him any extra time on TV either, but they explained it away by saying he had to buy the time, which was fine, because I'm betting, Roman, that they actually recorded this ahead of time to make sure that, because of the ridiculous nature of how everything looked, that maybe they wanted to make sure that this was suitable for that time frame. And the wackiness level of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, of which there was little, I have a feeling they wanted to test this out and not do it live in front of the crowd.
That very well could be, you know, but just looking at my notes, it's like this is the third appearance of Humperdinck. We're not even like 15 minutes into the show. That is a lot for one person. You know, I think somebody like a Piper could carry that off, but Humperdinck, that's might be a little overexposure if you ask me.
And there's one of the benefits and the curses to the old regional television wrestling shows. When there was somebody on there that you really liked or somebody on there that was really exciting, like a Roddy Piper, who 2 weeks ago has that incredible tour de force on the show. Awesome. When it's, you know, not to throw him under the bus, but let's say, you know, Mike George main eventing Mid-South was a little bit different and a little bit less exciting and exhilarating than when, like, Junkyard Dog or Hacksaw Duggan or Ted DiBiase was. And that's unfortunately one of the things that happens. And when you have somebody that's new in the area and you're trying to get them over as a force, like a Sir Oliver Humperdinck, you know, occasionally it's going to be a little bit too much of that person. And that happened on this show. And because of the overdub of Jimmy Valiant's music, we're not going to go ahead and play this promo with Humperdinck and Ivan Koloff, but I can guarantee you the picture of Ivan Koloff standing there dressed in what he was dressed in is definitely going to be the picture that you see as the artwork for this show. Roman, I mean, Valiant had, first of all, basically, Ivan Koloff starts to cut a promo. And when Jimmy Valiant busts in, throws a garbage can at them, perfectly hits the mic stand. So that bounces. He runs in the scene. The mic stand bounces back up again. His black hat, he throws his black cowboy hat with the feather off. He rips off his t-shirt, not his black leather jacket, but the red and white striped t-shirt he had on underneath. He tears that off. He's got white pants pulled up over his belly button. And he was the second most wacky dressed guy in the segment, because the person that he ran off, as he screamed, "New York City street fight, I'll kill ya, I'll kill ya," Ivan Koloff was wearing a Everlast amateur boxing headgear, a Russian chain around his neck, a red shovel for God knows what reason. He's holding the NWA Mid-Atlantic TV title belt. He's wearing a green polo shirt, gray slacks, and a brown belt with a small gold buckle that you would swear probably was maybe a championship belt for a midget. It was the most bizarre looking outfit I have ever seen in my entire life.
Thank you, Mr. Blackwell, with the fashion report there. Man, you were on top of that, Mike.
I have to. You, my God, what did you, see sartorial splendor? Did you see haberdashery taken to another level when you hoisted your eyes and foisted your eyes, or however the saying goes, upon Ivan Koloff?
Ivan must have had about 26 different gimmicks with him. What did he have? A headgear, shovel, chain. Surprised he didn't bring a lawnmower out with him. He had everything known to man. And it was kind of weird when the trash can came into play, just not to hear an announcer, not to hear somebody like put it over. It was just,
they didn't need it.
Kind of weird to get hit.
From stage left, you see a green Rubbermaid trash can just clunk the mic stand. Humperdinck throws his arm up. He goes off one way. Koloff backs off. It's just, it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. And that's where I'm so upset we can't play it, because that's where, of course, Boy from New York City kicks in, because Valiant's out there. But it's that horrible, extra loud overdub of it, and you can't hear what Valiant is saying. And the main focus and the main point of the whole damn thing is, as we mentioned earlier on, Ivan Koloff is making excuses as to why he doesn't want to give Jimmy Valiant a title shot. And Jimmy Valiant is out there, and he wants New York street fights, and he is threatening to kill Ivan Koloff, who actually threatened to kill Jimmy Valiant earlier on in the year. So, you know, maybe homicide on a pole match is what they're going for here, Roman. But I guess we can explain away the red shovel a little bit as we fast forward to next week. And there aren't any of these gimmicks really with Ivan Koloff. There are very few of them left, but he does incorporate a new one, which is the Siberian coal miner's glove. And it, I guess I am to assume, or we are to assume, Roman, that the red shovel that Ivan Koloff has is to signify the salt mines that his grandfather used to work in.
I guess that's one way of explaining it. The only other guy I've seen do anything like that was, well, Murdoch used to come out in Mid-South, and they would call it a trenching tool with a shovel. But yeah, that's not normally just something a wrestler comes to the ring with, is a shovel.
Our next segment was Sergeant Slaughter facing off against Tim Horner. And during this match early on, Bob Cottlestill talks about Leroy Brown and the House of Humperdinck. And much like we mentioned with Sir Oliver Humperdinck dominating the show, sometimes back in the territorial days, you get somebody out there who you weren't big on, and they'd become long in the tooth for you very quickly. Well, oftentimes there were long matches that were just meant to get time in and meant to get work in. And this is one of two of them on the show, and this is the shorter one, the singles version with Sergeant Slaughter and Tim Horner. And it wasn't necessarily a incredibly long match or anything like that. It only went about 7 minutes or so, but it was a way for Tim Horner to get experience, get some offense in with a bigger guy that could move for him. And it was a way that Sergeant Slaughter could kind of bump around a little bit and really play up his heeldom, as Tim Horner would kind of make good baby face spots in, and Slaughter would smack him down again. And that really was the base of this match here. Relatively unexciting, and made more just to kind of to get some things across with the House of Humperdinck and reminding everyone that Sergeant Slaughter is the U.S. champion and he's a bad guy.
I like this contest. You know, I thought it was pretty good. I thought Horner looked good. Very lightning quick, pardon the pun. But, it served its purpose. And there was one spot in there that looked a little bit dangerous, was when Horner went to whip Slaughter into the ropes, and Slaughter's head went under the top rope before he ricocheted back to the center of the ring. If you watch it, it looks like it could have caused whiplash. It looked very awkward to see Slaughter's head go under the top rope between the ropes and then kind of bounce back. Something was off there, but I thought it was a good contest. And then Slaughter hit the cannon and finished him off.
And I mentioned about Bob Cottle talking about Leroy Brown with the House of Humperdinck. It's also during this match that he does put Piper and Moronco in the House of Humperdinck. Now, that's him doing that, not Sir Oliver, but flat out, Bob Cottle puts Piper Morocco with Humperdinck as a member of that group. So, again, a wonky way to kind of have everybody associated and melded together on the heel roster there. But the number one chief big heel, United States heavyweight champion Sergeant Slaughter, he, after his match, went out and joined Bob Cottle and got a little bit of a surprise.
Down from the clothesline now goes Horner. Slaughter is going to cover him right here. Hook the leg for the count of three. And it's all going to be over with our winner, the U.S. champ, Sergeant Slaughter, who's right here with us at ringside.
You know, the conspiracy is on. You can't trust anybody around here. The Crockett's had me signed to wrestle Abe Jacobs. When I get to the studio today, here I am with a main eventer, Tim Horner. I know Wahoo McDaniels is behind all this. You just can't trust anybody anymore. You can't turn your back on anybody anymore. Especially guys like Wahoo McDaniels. Especially guys like Jack Briscoe. Especially guys like Jeff.
Wahoo McDaniels into the studio with that strap, and it's doubled over, and you really hit him a lick across the back with that one.
Well, let me tell you something, Carl. It was real funny last week when a man jumped in the ring and that Marine belt hit me in the face. You know, we're going to be in some matches around this area with those Canadian lumberjack. People are going to have these straps just like this outside the ring. And when a man goes out, he gets whipped until he gets back in, and I tell you, I think I'm tough, and I've been thrown out, and I had to get back in that ring in a hurry because it hurt. But I'm going to tell you something, Slaughter. That little strap is nothing. You take a look at my head and my face. You know, he says when he goes home, his family doesn't recognize him. The Marines at the base don't recognize him. Well, I'm going to tell you one thing. You keep messing with me, and I guarantee you they're not going to recognize you. All you're going to have is a broken nose, some cauliflowered ears, and a lot of stitches. Just remember, Canadian lumberjack matches, they're around, and I can keep him in the ring, and when I can keep him in the ring, I can make him look like anything I want to, Bob.
All right, fans, there it is from Wahoo McDaniel.
There we hear from the big chief, Wahoo McDaniel, after he runs off United States heavyweight champion Sergeant Slaughter. And if you're living in the area, you're hoping that that one comes on your card, U.S. championship matches. Canadian lumberjack strap matches. Bunch of crazy men around the ring, all holding straps in their hands, all willing to beat the next man. Sergeant Slaughter, who already could not go home because people didn't recognize him. The dog was biting him because he thought he was an intruder. That's the type of damage that Wahoo McDaniel has inflicted upon Sergeant Slaughter, and he's looking to do more of it. Sergeant Slaughter, Wahoo McDaniel, can listen and watch them every time out, Roman.
Yeah, and right on cue, Slaughter's talking about how you can't trust Wahoo. Wahoo jumps him from behind and hits him with that leather strap to set up the series of Canadian Lumberjack matches. And the thing about the Canadian Lumberjack match, for those of you that have not seen them before, on the outside, when they have those straps, they don't gently hit the guy. They're laying into him. So just imagine not only getting hit by Wahoo with the strap, you get tossed outside. Now you're getting hit by five or six of Wahoo's cronies. So, I mean, you're taking it from every which way, every which direction. And those matches could be brutal. I mean, they could turn you into hamburger meat in a heartbeat.
And can you imagine some of the ribs that were played on guys, you know, some of the shots that were surely laid in by people there. And it's you talk about Wahoo's cronies there with Jack Briscoe and Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, everybody wanting to take shots at Slaughter. Let's not forget, even though they have been, in my opinion at least, conspicuous by their absence, the privates are still running around. Maybe they're dominating worldwide TV. And in fact, you know, Wahoo mentions getting knocked in the head and whipped by that belt from Sergeant Slaughter. That's probably something that took place on Worldwide, as we didn't have any of that taking place on Mid-Atlantic, as Wahoo, if I'm not mistaken, stood tall with Jack Briscoe at the end, but I'd have to go back and double check on that one. But that moves us on to our next segment. And much like we believe that the Sir Oliver Humperdinck promo earlier on may have been to fill some time, we definitely got that here with my main man, David Patterson, and Ken Timms. And Ken Timms obviously would create more of a name for himself in Tennessee and throughout the Southeast as time would go on. Still a relative young buck here. Teaming up with David Patterson, who would also go all over the place in many, many incarnations. And he was a fixture for a long time. And you could tell right off the bat, both of these guys, but especially David Patterson, was going to be in the business for a long time, at least at some level. We usually skip over some of these promos here, but I can't help myself with David Patterson, who always starts just so damn hot. And if there was a time limit you could put on a David Patterson and partner promo, it should probably be about a minute long. But unfortunately, we get longer than that when it comes to these interviews because they got about 2 minutes and 40 seconds to fill. But at least David Patterson finds a more creative way to fill it.
All right, fans, and moving in with us right here ringside, David Patterson and Ken Timms. David, you two fellas, I got to tell you about the match, and I know you know what you got coming up here when you get Rick Steamboat in there and you get Jack Briscoe in that ring.
Ricky Steamboat and Jack Briscoe, we are going to do it to you hard and nasty here today, baby. Hard and nasty, because that's the way I like to do it, hard and nasty. Tell him, Tim. Tell him, baby.
When you get in the ring with us, you're going to get the fight of your life, baby. Fight of your life. You better come ready, baby. We're gunning for you.
Hey, you know they're going to be ready in the ring. Now, what about you two guys having a fight for you? What about you having a fight for your life?
Don't worry about us. You don't worry about us. You just watch what goes on in there. You don't worry about us. We're ready, baby. We're ready, and we're going to give it to them everything they can take, baby.
Wait a minute. Let me say something in Spanish, because I know everybody. Uomo, cavalco, Ricky Steamboat, Jack Briscoe, aquí mimito esta noche en Guasaván, lo que es meterse en el ring con un latino y un gringo, porque vamos a acabar con ustedes. Tú no sabes lo que va a pasar aquí. Esta noche va a pagar, mi hermano, va a pagar aquí mimito.
You gonna tell me what you said now?
I said Ricky Steamboat and Jack Briscoe, you better be ready for the fight of your life. You better be ready to do it hard and nasty in the best way you can, because I'm gonna take advantage of any little tiny error that you make, brother. I'm gonna be all over you like a rat on cheese.
Hey, Rick Steamboat, you know he's already steamed up. He had to get out there to Leroy Brown
at
the beginning of our program.
He didn't have sticking his nose where it didn't belong. When you stick your nose where it don't belong, you get it punched. It's just as simple as that. And tell you now, Steamboat, Briscoe, we're going to do a little nose punching ourselves.
Ooh. I tell you, you guys are talking mighty big out here.
Hey, we talk big because we are big.
You're big, right. There's no doubt about that. But these two guys, when you get them in the ring, they're going to be something extra special.
We'll see. When we get them in the ring, we'll find out who's going to do it, who's the best. Only one man can be the best, and you're looking at him.
What about tag team wrestling? Do you, Ken, you and David, do you prefer the tag team?
I wrestle any way, anywhere, anyhow, anybody, anytime. Doesn't matter.
Single, tag, whatever.
All right, fans, that's it right here from David Patterson and Ken Timms.
There were about 10 spots. Not 10, that's exaggerating, but at least 3 spots during that interview that if this was a fight, it could have been stopped and probably should have been stopped, but it can't be stopped because we got time to fill and your enemy is the clock and you got to fill time. And, you know, we've heard a lot worse promos than this. And I got to admit, Roman, one, I am partial towards David Patterson. And two, he does a smart thing here because he starts speaking in Spanish, which ties up to a little bit more time. And it gives Bob a perfect reason to say, okay, we'll tie up some more time. Can you translate a little of that? I thought did a fine job with that there, and I'd like to hear a little bit more of that.
Yeah, and Patterson, you nailed it. He's one of those guys that in short spurts is okay. But then once he gets to that 40, 45-second mark, you start to see his promos really start to go downhill, and it's not even like he can pass the baton to Timms. Because Patterson is definitely way better than Timms on the mic during this promo. And you could tell Timms almost looked like a deer in headlights. He looked kind of lost out there. And, did go a little bit long, definitely. I don't think these two should be getting two-minute promos. But that was a good point you mentioned, Mike, about him doing it in Spanish, because that did eat up a little bit more of the clock.
I think we should get shirts made up that say, do it hard and nasty and the best way you can. Which I like how he threw that in there at the end. The nose puncher, Ken Timms, not holding up to his end of the deal. He's like, you know, like What do you think about that, Timms? Yeah, we're just going to go out there and we're going to get him. And at least he wasn't scared of the camera, but he had absolutely nothing to add to the proceedings. And they had absolutely nothing to add to Jack Briscoe and Ricky Steamboat. Actually, that's a lie. They had a lot to add to Ricky Steamboat and Jack Briscoe. And in fact, Roman, maybe a little too much of it. But again, this is one of the blessings and curses of the old style of territory matches where you would get an extended match that was basically just to show off. Patterson and Timms getting some time in, getting some offense in against better guys, having good guys that could sell for them like a Ricky Steamboat. And if you look at this through a modern scope, as many of you are doing, no matter when you're listening to this, matches have gotten much shorter. Preliminary matches, they don't usually beat around the bush too much. If we're going to have a crappy finish or there's going to be a run-in, they usually 2 minutes, 3 minutes, those things are out of the way. But they didn't do that back in the day. And in 1982, they certainly weren't doing that on Mid-Atlantic TV. And they wanted to see if David Patterson and Ken Timms could become future stars. So they gave them 10 minutes with the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion and the most popular babyface in the territory and a former World Tag Team Champion, Briscoe and Steamboat. What'd you think about the match?
I actually thought it was good, but something that I, on my notes, I write down like at what point in the show the match came on. So with me, it came on at the 32-minute mark. So I'm thinking to myself, it's going to be a 4-minute match, and they'll close the show with a couple promos. And they actually kind of, in a way, almost did like a false finish, because at one point, Briscoe was working on the leg, which is the precursor to the figure four. He puts the figure four on, and I think it was Timms that came in, or Patterson came in and stopped the figure four. So they had to keep going. Steamboat did a good job of selling so much that the crowd actually started cheering for him. Go, Ricky, go. They were getting into it, trying to cheer Steamboat on. Steamboat did a lot of selling in this contest, which, you know, he's no stranger to doing that. He can make anybody look good. And then there was even one spot where Steamboat hit a belly-to-back suplex on Timms. And Cottle out loud says, he won't kick out of that one, but he did. He got out of it. So it made you think, like, wow, Steamboat and Briscoe might be in a little bit of trouble. These two youngsters or these two enhancement guys, I should say, maybe not youngsters, but these two enhancement guys are taking it to Steamboat and Briscoe. And so when Steamboat and Briscoe eventually did get the win, you felt like they earned it. It was a competitive match. It went longer than I thought, but I'm not complaining about it. I was just a little bit surprised it went that length, but I thought it was a good contest.
Now, you hit me with the Mr. Blackwell earlier on. What did you think about Ricky Steamboat's beard? Am I the only one who actually liked Ricky Steamboat with a beard?
It's weird because most of the times, you know, I know like when Wyndham would start growing a beard, you know, you're like, I think a heel turn's coming. You know, with Steamboat, you never thought that. It's a little bit different. I'm so used to Ricky being the clean cut guy, you know, so it was a little bit different seeing him with some facial hair.
Standing next to Mr. Clean Cut for the longest time, Jack Briscoe, who still wants Roddy Piper and Don Morocco. And we'll go ahead and listen to those two guys as the show goes off the air.
Fans with us right here, Rick Steam. Hey, I tell you, you two guys, you had more than a handful right there.
You know something, Bob? Week after week, we wrestle here. And I bet Jack is inclined to agree with me that competition around here just gets tougher each week.
There's no doubt about it, Ricky. You know, Patterson's and Timms have come a long way. I've seen them improve just match after match and week after week on television. And they give us all we could handle tonight. Two fine young athletes, and they've been the rules once in a while, but we don't mind that.
No.
We'll go for anything, whatever they want to do.
I got to ask you about Leroy Brown. You came charging out here at the beginning of the program, got up in the ring. I got to ask you about him, Ray.
Hey, you know, word had spread like wildfire that Leroy Brown had signed a contract to be under Sir Oliver Humperdinck in the Humperdinck house, to have Humperdinck as a manager, and everybody knows what his quietus though is around this area as a manager. Nobody could believe it. I never pass judgment upon a man until I get to see it with my own eyes. And what happened earlier in the show, I believed it, and I had to do something. He was beating a guy out here so bad he wanted to put him out of professional wrestling. I was in the monitor room by myself. I took it upon to come out here and try and help him. And then the big man started wailing on myself. Humperdinck got in a few licks while I was in there also. Well, like I said, never pass judgment until I see it with my own eyes. Well, brother, I saw it, and plus, I felt a little bit of it.
Jack, talking about that Humperdinck, you know, that Morocco.
Well, it looked like Humperdinck and Morocco and Piper's all tied in together, just like Leroy Brown. Morocco was bought off by Piper. So Piper, Morocco, Texas death matches, you know, where that's the type of match I prefer, where falls don't count. You know, the only way you can win is when your opponent can't even get up and answer the bell. That's the kind of matches I want with them. I don't care where or who or how it is. I want Piper, I want Morocco, and now Leroy Brown is added to the list. So no matter what it is, fence match, Texas death match, Piper, Morocco, my brother Jerry is ready.
That's right.
His leg is healed. We're coming after you. We want you. We want you inside that ring, and we're going to get you. We're going to go after you.
Payback's a mother, boy.
Payback is a mother, Ricky Steamboat, and there you hear the end of the show. You hear some notes that get played there. If you really are a big fan of the overdubbed music they use for Don Ray's Got to Have Lovin' for all of these Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling shows, you get to hear the full song, the full presentation, the full intro to whatever the name is of this overdub for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling music at the end of this show here on the July 24th, 1982 edition. You will get to hear the whole song. So if you are a big fan of that, you will have it to your heart's content. Get a recording of it, play it over and over again, enjoy it, love it, live it, and I guess be happy that it's not the Jimmy Valiant theme that's stuck in your head. But Roman, there you hear from Jack Briscoe and Ricky Steamboat, and once again, it still feels like they are playing a little bit of catch-up when it comes to the stories and kind of fitting the puzzle pieces in after they've already got the thing framed and trying to make it work, with Jack Briscoe now putting Piper in Morocco the same way Bob Cottle did with Sir Oliver Humperdinck. We will know that that's not true in the next upcoming weeks. Ricky Steamboat talking about Leroy Brown and kind of like, okay, hey, now we're set up to have a feud, even though we had seen Ricky Steamboat be involved with Roddy Piper. We have seen him be involved with other people, including in a tag team with Jay Youngblood over the last couple of weeks. It seems as though, and I could be, again, overthinking this, that something had to have been changed on this show. Something needed to be tweaked, and we ended up with the presentation of what we got.
Very, very much could be that way, because you know, they tried to rationalize or explain the Humperdinck, but that was something I thought of too. Like, boy, he's getting a lot of airtime. And yeah, just two matches, you know, especially the last match went longer than what you would think. And, you know, credit to Steamboat and Briscoe. I mean, two of the all-time greats. And had you never seen Patterson or Timms before, and that was your first time watching Mid-Atlantic, you would probably think that they might have been two of the bigger name wrestlers in the territory. I mean, they made them look that good, and you know, it was a credit to them on that. But yeah, the format did seem a little bit weird, and I'm looking forward, obviously, to the return of Piper. You know, such a great show we had a couple weeks ago when he came in, and it was the Roddy Piper Hour. And when there's Piper, there's all kinds of excitement. Whether you love him, hate him, whatever, he is a polarizing figure. So I'm looking forward to Piper returning pretty soon.
Now, if you're listening to this show, you're probably a big history fan, so you know what's going to be upcoming here in the next few weeks. We are going to get a lot more Roddy Piper, and we're going to see a side of Roddy Piper that we've never seen before in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. But before we get there, we have next week's show, and I will run down the network preview for the show. July 31st, 1982 goes like this. On this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Matt Bourne partners with Gene Anderson and NWA United States Champion Sergeant Slaughter for a six-man tag team match, plus Jake Roberts in action, Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe team up in the main event, and much more. And now I'll take us to around the circuit with some of the results that are going on, including the first of our Canadian Lumberjack matches between Sergeant Slaughter and Wahoo McDaniel. And we begin in Winston-Salem at Memorial Coliseum, where Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff, Leroy Brown defeated the Ninja by disqualification, and Paul Jones defeated Matt Bourne. Also on Thursday, the 22nd, in Norfolk at the Scope, Sergeant Slaughter faced off against Wahoo McDaniel. Ricky Steamboat and Jack Briscoe faced Roddy Piper and Don Morocco. And Angelo Mosca faced off against Jay Youngblood. The next night on Friday, the 23rd, in Charleston at County Hall, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a steel cage match. The Privates defeated Jay Youngblood and Jake Roberts. And Leroy Brown defeated the Ninja. Over in Richmond on Friday night at the Coliseum, Ricky Steamboat drew with Don Morocco. Jack Briscoe knocked off Roddy Piper by countout. And Sergeant Slaughter defeated Wahoo McDaniel in a Canadian Lumberjack strap match. Saturday night at the Coliseum in Charlotte, Paul Jones and Jake Roberts defeated the Privates. Jack Briscoe and Jerry Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper and Don Morocco in a Texas death match. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a New York street fight. And Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a lumberjack match. On Sunday in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens, the Ninja made the trip and defeated Johnny Weaver by pinfall. The Destroyer defeated Nick DiCarlo. Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood defeated the Privates. Andre the Giant defeated Big John Studd. Angelo Mosca defeated Gene Kaniski. And Jimmy Snuka defeated Bob Backlund by countout. Also on Sunday in Asheville at the Civic Center, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a steel cage match. Jake Roberts defeated Matt Bourne. Paul Jones defeated Gene Anderson. And Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel defeated Roddy Piper and Sergeant Slaughter. On Monday, July 26, in Greenville, South Carolina, at Memorial Auditorium, Paul Jones and Jake Roberts defeated Matt Bourne and Gene Anderson, and Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a Siberian Salt Miner's Glove match. Also on Monday in Whiteville, North Carolina, Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter, while Jack Briscoe defeated Leroy Brown by disqualification. Also on Monday, the Ontario Tour continued for some guys as Private Nelson defeated Nick DiCarlo, the Destroyer defeated Tim Girard, Private Canoodle defeated Johnny Weaver, Gene Kaniski and John Studd defeated Angelo Mosca and Jay Youngblood, and Ricky Steamboat defeated the Ninja in the main event held in Kingston, Ontario. On Tuesday, the 27th, in Columbia, South Carolina, Township Auditorium, Jack Briscoe defeated Leroy Brown by disqualification, while Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a Canadian Lumberjack match. There was no wrestling on Thursday in Raleigh, but there was wrestling held in Ottawa, Ontario, at the Civic Center, where the Destroyer beat Tim Girard, Gene Kaniski defeated Nick DiCarlo, Ric Flair went up to defend his NWA championship against Ricky Steamboat, which Flair won by disqualification, along with the Privates defeating Johnny Weaver and Tony Parisi, Jay Youngblood defeating the Ninja in an Indian strap match, and Angelo Mosca defeating John Studd in a lumberjack match. And that takes us around to Wednesday, July 28th, and the tapings at WPCQ Studios in Charlotte, North Carolina. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and want more things related to it, you can find them via all of our social media. We have all of it, but we update Twitter and Facebook the most. Just search Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. Please support all of the shows here in the extended 605 family of podcasts. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving wrestling history. And I'm happy that this podcast, executive produced by me for the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us out of here, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.